Hey, John Torpy, I thought I'd try something different yet again. How do you like our TMZ-esque style MTOM podcast?
I like this. This is kind of nice. Don't really have to stray from the desk and keep watching the wires. And it's a little bit more casual and kind of how we usually banter.
That's right. I'm going to have to not sit back on my chair because I hear that is making a lot of noise. This is this week's MTOM podcast, and John Torpy, producer at Iowa PBS and Market to Market, is our guest for part one. Part two, Johnny White, who is in the Napa Valley, California area. He is a Farm Bureau president. He is with the Pina Vineyard Management Group. He's also a volunteer firefighter in that region. So the reason these are paired together, you ask, John, is you're working on a story for the 30th of October's Market to Market about disasters, and one of the things you may or may not talk about, depending on the final edit, is the Western wildfires.
The Western wildfires will definitely make their mark because they've made their mark on the country this year. I kind of picked the three worst disasters of all the disasters this year. And so we'll be looking at the agricultural and financial impacts of the wildfires, which set unprecedented records. Then we'll look at the drought and the derecho that basically decimated the Iowa corn crop and the other places that were affected by the drought. And then we'll also take a look at Louisiana, who has had a total of six named storms, four of which were hurricanes, and four of those were well into the billion-dollar damage mark. So that's kind of what got this started.
Well, and there was a story just last weekend that started making the rounds that says that derecho will be the most expensive thunderstorm in U.S. history. You don't call a hurricane a thunderstorm. That's a hurricane. But it's on par with what a hurricane damage can be.
Yeah. I was collecting data from the National Weather Service and National Hurricane Center, and I brought up, you know, I kind of told them what I was doing, and I brought up the derecho, and they were like, oh, so you guys had like a 70-mile-wide tornado. It's like if you took a hurricane and you just stretched it out and let it go in a straight line rather than spin, is basically how they described it.
I'm reading a tweet from a neighbor of mine from the homestead, Ben Renshi. He's asking, between the derecho and the drought, it makes me wonder how the Iowa economy is going to fare over the next year with so many farm revenues capped at crop insurance guarantee minimums. I mean, Ben's got a lot of land, but that's a very valid question that we still don't know the answer to.
And that's one of the points in this story is we're not going to have a lot of answers for a long time. I'm going to talk to Dr. Licht, Mark Licht at Iowa State, and he is one of those guys that goes in and looks at the aftermath of a storm like the derecho and looks at the plants and says, okay, this is why this is going to be bad for much longer. We're looking at tons of volunteer corn. You're looking at all sorts of soil issues. And so this problem isn't just, okay, we cleaned up, it's been harvest, and now we just start over in 2021. These problems will linger for a long time.
Well, and that is the same that you'll hear from Johnny White. Johnny had an incredible hat here to talk about, and you understand fuel with wildfires, and that is forest management is something that has come up on the presidential campaign. The president has criticized California for Western management. One thing that Johnny said is that Cal Fire used to do a certain thing 50 years ago, but they don't anymore, and for whatever reason. And there's a lot of things. He says they had held meetings this spring about, hey, you landowners with a 100-acre plot, for example, 20 is good enough for grapes because it falls under all and meets all the regulations. But this other 80 can't because it's too hilly, too whatever, and then it gets overgrown. Well, if we would just maintain that other 80 acres, he says this would have been a whole different fire. He said the fire was going through open areas that you just can't imagine. It would come out of the mountains, find some dry brush here, shoot through a dry creek bed, across a road, into another field, and down it went for the grapes. So asking what it was like to work in those conditions. But then I also asked him what it's like to be a firefighter in those conditions. And John, you spent some time understanding firefighters, and Wildfire training is not something they do in Iowa.
No, when you see the fire flags go off in Iowa, they're like, wow, it's that dry? But yeah, that's a different breed of firefighter altogether. But what's interesting about those wildfires and winemaking in the vineyards are actually a fire break. Because you have all this dry timber, you know, the fire's got a place to march. But once you get to that vineyard, there's an actual fire break. There's very little vegetation till you get to the vines. The second part is the vines can take a pretty hard beating. That's a very fertile, docile, I mean, just strong plant. And those roots go all the way into the ground. Now, these vineyards, some of them are hundreds of years old. And the most important and the most expensive thing in a vineyard is the insurance on those vines. But well, they actually count on those vines and they count on the water reservoirs at those vineyards to help slow the fires down.
One of the things that they learned in 2017 is if the drip hose irrigation burns, then you know the grapes are probably toast. Huh, so that was the one thing they learned in 2017. According to Johnny. So he's in our discussion. The last thing you mentioned is the Southeast, the Gulf Coast. You've already done a story on the regular program here a couple of weeks ago as we sit here this morning and record about the Southeast and the hurricanes. But we also know it's cotton harvest season, and there's a concern in some parts of that these hurricanes. But we've actually not seen a hurricane for almost a week.
Yeah.
It's weird.
There's actually two still out there. I mean, Hurricane Epsilon, it's parked out there and doing its thing. And then there's another tropical depression, but they're not quite sure what that one's going to do. But yeah, next week, I believe on Monday, I'll be having a conversation with Secretary of Agriculture, Mike Stein.
In Louisiana?
Yeah.
Yep.
He'll be talking to me about the cotton crop. And we'll also cover sugarcane and some of the other facets that in northern Louisiana just got deluged by rain after rain after rain after rain. But when you look at it, you know, they got one hurricane after another, and it was every single one of them was $1 billion. There was a $10 billion hurricane, and Laura came in with $12 billion. And then, you know, Sally came in there with $6 billion worth of damage. So these guys are just getting beaten down time and time and time again.
Well, watch John Torpy's story on October 30th's Market to Market. So if you're listening after October 30, go back and look at our YouTube or on our website. But today's discussion is we go west into the state of California. Johnny White is our guest on the M2M podcast. And as always, if you have anything you want to talk to us about, hit us up with an email, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. And now, let's talk grapes in California and forest management. Well, normally in the fall, it's a beautiful time to be in your part of the world. I mean, Napa Valley is a pretty gorgeous place any time of year, but the fall is pretty special. A little different this year, isn't it, Johnny?
Yeah, it's a little different, but it's kind of becoming the norm the last few years, unfortunately. But right now, everything's kind of coming back together. It's just a different looking landscape right now.
What is the landscape look like? I mean, we see these pictures of fires and we see that it's, you know, headed through a county. I mean, Napa's not a small county, but it's not the largest in California.
Sure. By California standard, you know, Napa's a fairly small county. With the rest of the country, it's probably fairly large. We grow 45,000 acres of grapes. That's our number one commodity in this county is wine grapes. And this last fire was, the glass fire was 61,000 acres. So kind of put it in perspective. And the LNU fire, which was a month before this, that burned 33% of our county was 300,000 plus or minus acres. So, as you can imagine, more than 50% of our county is black right now.
And when you burn a grape and you burn the vineyard, that's easy to see that it's gone. Not easy in the sense of that's a crop, but you can tell the damage. But those that survive and maybe didn't burn, how do you know that those aren't any good?
That's what we're all learning and trying to figure out right now. we see some vineyards that are definitely torched. They're done over. What we learned in 2017 with the Atlas and Tubbs fire, generally speaking, and talking to our neighbors in Lake County who have been dealing with the fires longer than we have at this scale, if drip hose, all of our vineyards are drip irrigated. If the drip hose is melted, you can consider that vine dead, is not coming back. Other plants will come back, but they turn red about August and they're damaged and they're not going to produce a good crop and they're not going to get the sugars that we need out of the grapes. And so it's really a trial and error, and it's how conservative you want to go. If you want to just pull the whole thing out and start over, or if you're going to try to save some and, you know, start going along the course. It's really hard for us to tell right now. Like I said, we're all still kind of learning, but there's some places that you can see it's obvious the vines aren't going to come back, and others it's not so obvious.
Well, in corn and soybean country, October is a pretty big month for harvest. That's the same for wine country, right? This is the middle of harvest?
Yes, sir. October is typically our biggest month. We're mostly Cabernet and Napa Valley, and that's what's being harvested in October. We start in August with our white variety, Chardonnay, kind of progress into Pinots and maybe some Syrahs and Zinfandels. And by October, that's when we're up and going and cranking, going 7 days a week, bringing in the crop, typically. Not this October, though.
Right. You are a man of many hats. You can speak vineyard very well because that's the main job, but you also involved with a couple other things we'll get into. Vineyard-wise, you mentioned the 2017 fires and you mentioned other fires, and when you lose a crop 1 year or have a damage, I mean, there's going to be something that could go wrong, whether it's a disease or an illness, and a fire comes through, and maybe that's the problem of the year. Are we in a dire situation yet with the amount of grapes that have been lost to such a key area for your Cabernets or your whites? Or, you know, I mean, how desperate is it right now with the amount of grapes that have been lost over the last few years?
You know, in 2017, it wasn't a large loss. There was some loss. It was late in the year. You know, it was toward the end of October, middle to end of October when the fires happened in 17. So we didn't really see the loss that we've seen this year. It was August 17th, I believe, is when the LNU fires started here. So there, maybe only half of the white grapes had been picked by then. And after that, then we had the glass fire and in September. And so most of the red grapes hadn't been picked. So we're looking at a significant loss to the 2020 crop. There is still some 2020 crop that was harvested before the fires. There's some that did not receive the smoke damage or heat damage. But overall, we're starting to have a surplus in the market of grapes. And this is definitely going to quell that surplus. The bulk market, which is where you go when you custom crush your grapes and sell the juice on the bulk market when you don't have a buyer that's buying your grapes. The week that the glass fire started, that bulk market exploded, and it's pretty low on inventory now.
It's low by a third, by a half. I mean, what's an estimate there?
I couldn't speak to that. I don't follow it that closely. I just know, talking to the guys that work in that area, that it was a significant, most of the bulk in this county was bought up in that week.
Well, you lose your grape, which is you know, your main ingredient of a product. You've also lost the ability, some of those businesses, to have tastings and have people come in and see what you're doing. COVID has been an impact. I mean, it's both a front and a backside damage to that region in the wine industry. Is that fair?
Yeah. And, you know, with COVID, definitely the front side, the tasting rooms, they felt that, they saw that. As growers, we didn't, you know, we didn't feel it was just another obstacle for us to get through, like any other farming issue that comes up. It was something that we had to adapt and overcome with, and we did, and made it through fine. COVID wasn't going to be an issue for us as grape growers. But these fires definitely are. It's different than an insect that comes in or having a bad mildew year or something else. You always have next year. There's quite a few vineyards that are going to have to be ripped out and completely replanted, and it'll be 3 or 4 years before they'll start producing again. So it's going to be interesting to see. Again, it's too early. We haven't been able to do all the assessments, and we still don't know how much damage is there. Like we were talking before, is how much of that vineyard that has burn damage is going to have to be replaced.
Well, one of your other jobs, Johnny, is a volunteer firefighter. What district or city, or, I mean, I know they're kind of broken up a little differently, but township, what department were you on?
Sure. I'm a part-time firefighter for the town of St. Helena, which
okay.
is the heart of Napa Valley.
Exactly. It's right there on the highway. Everybody sees it, the signs. You can great historic vineyards there. So, yeah, October, you're busy trying to do your main job. Traditional year, how many calls were you able to go on? And then what was it like this October and September?
My numbers definitely drop off with the fire department and around harvest time, you know, September, October, into November. This year, I spent a week to 10 days on the LNU fire and another 10 days here on the glass fire. It's one of those things, while the fire's going, there's not a whole lot going on here in the vineyards, not a lot we can do. I'm able to focus on the fire.
What's it like fighting a wildfire?
Good question. Never been asked that before. It's a lot of hiking. It's hot, smoky. This fire, especially the glass fire, was extremely smoky. I think our air index level was 800 on a couple of the days, and over 150 is unhealthy. The smoke was just socked in here. There was several days where we weren't exactly sure where the fire was, because it was so smoky that you couldn't tell how far out there in front of it was. But it just depends. You know, when this glass fire started, it was just rapid expansion, and it was, you know, the first time that we ever really heard this or practiced this was life safety only. So all we were doing is evacuating people and getting people out of the way of the front of the fire. There was no engaging in the fire. It was just get people out, first responder life safety, and then civilian life safety. And once that's accomplished, then it's try to figure out how to tackle this fire. And it usually dies with the wind. It dies down. But by then, it's so big, and you have such a big area that you're dealing with, that it keeps burning, and it'll go slow, and then it makes these big runs up the mountain, and that's kind of what you're dealing with. And really, it's what I did on the fire was had a bunch of dozers, and what we do is cut line out there in front of the fire and try to get you know, line cut so that there's somewhere to stop the fire at.
Where, if you, and I'm drawing a blank on the name of the highway there, that
29,
yeah, the main trail. If you look to the east or at certain parts, you look to the west, it is flat. It is a valley. But then if you look the other side, it is the mountains, and it's not that treacherous mountain range after mountain range after mountain range, but it's still there, and you're still in that area. So were you operating that bulldozer more in the mountain area, or were you trying to prevent getting into some of that flat in the valley portion of your area?
So the fire started in the mountainside, and I was working in the mountainside, but that fire actually did come across the valley floor. What it would do is find any fence line, any ditch line, any creek, river, and it'd get in there and it'd run across that and run through the valley. And actually there were houses on the valley floor that burned down just because it'd get on a fence line, run that fence line, you know, that was only 4 or 5 feet wide, and then get into the grass and brush near a house and burn that house down. But for the most part, it was all in the hills. But there was damage on the valley floor.
You're much like I consider your area very much like a small town in the sense of the way it feels. You know everybody who's around there. Yeah, you got lots and lots of visitors that come through, but you're like a mountain town or a resort town of sorts. The locals know the locals. What's been the conversation like among you about this fire season?
That we'd like it to end. yeah, I mean, I'm sixth generation here, so you know, I know these hills very well. I know the area. I know the people who are there, the ranches that are in these hills. There's been a big focus on trying to start doing something about this. You know, fire needs fuel. Or wildland fires driven by fuel, topography, and weather. We can't control the weather. We can't control topography, but we can control the fuel. And we haven't as private landowners, as, you know, the state lands or federal lands, done a good job of maintaining that land. You know, historically, this whole county was grazed. And before that, you know, we had Native Americans, and they would burn this off every fall. They'd come and burn it all off. And this landscape was designed to be burned. It needs to burn. And it's doing it in a controlled and safe manner. One of the issues here in the valley is that the grape commodity is so highly valued. So you may own 100 acres, but due to environmental restrictions and county code and everything else, you could only plant 20 of that acres into grapes up in the hillside because it's too steep or the chance of erosion and everything. And we have a lot of safeguards in there to really protect our hillsides and protect our watersheds. So out of that 100 acres, there's 80 acres that can't be planted to vineyard. And that 80 acres kind of just is forgotten about. It's not maintained. It's not making any money. It's not doing anything. Where, you know, 75 years ago, it was being grazed. It was being logged. You know, we do have timber up here on the west side of the county. And there is no commercial timber harvest here anymore. Kind of the environmental groups have really eliminated that until a fire comes through, and then it all gets logged because all the fire trees are dead, but the value isn't in that lumber anymore. So it's, you know, one of the farm bureaus in the foothills has a good saying is you graze it, log it, or watch it burn. And that's really what a lot of people around here have been talking about, is we need to manage this. We need to start grazing our lands that aren't being cultivated. We need to work on the brush. There's a lot of talk about fire breaks. Cal Fire, who is the state fire agency, used to build and maintain fire breaks in the hills, and they haven't done that for 50 years. And so we don't have those stopping points to try to stop fires. It's all, once a fire starts, trying to get out ahead of it and figure out what ridge you can get a bulldozer down to start creating these fire breaks, which takes time and usually doesn't work in time.
Doing them in real time and under the heat, or I guess a terrible way to describe it, in the line of fire, is not the time to be maintaining or creating those fire breaks, is what I think I'm hearing you say.
Exactly. Exactly.
You also said something, you kind of answered where I think I was going to ask, you know, if you had a magic wand, what would you do? But it sounds like people know what to do. They've just not been able to do. So I guess I'll ask it this way. How do you try to do what needs to be done to preserve your area?
Well, one of the things we did at the Farm Bureau is had a meeting this spring on prescribed burning and how to reintroduce prescribed burning. We haven't done this in 30 plus years in this county. And there's a lot of obstacles to it, but we've figured out a way to do it. There's other counties in California that have started really getting into prescribed burning. So we held this class, had a lot of excited people about it. And I think 90% of the people that attended the class, their ranches burned in this fire. So, you know, we were right there, just not quite quick enough. But it's good foundation. You know, we're going to need to be doing prescribed burning in the next 3-5 years. We're going to have brush growing back, and it's something that has to be maintained and keep going. But I think the biggest thing that we can do is what we're pushing for is some kind of tax incentive. Something that if I'm doing work to do fire prevention on my property, it's not just for my benefit. It's for the benefit of the entire community. Because if my land isn't managed, then I'm burning down my neighbor's property. The fire gets into the town, burning down a town. So I'd really like to see some kind of tax incentive that gives owners an incentive to start building fences, grazing, start clearing out underbrush. You know, it just takes time and money, and anything we can do to try to help with that. And I'm not asking for government to come do something, but if we could get some kind of incentive that I don't have to pay as much taxes, and I can instead use that money to maintain that extra 80 acres that isn't planted or cultivated.
Unless you're going to let me farm it, because yeah. Then I can clean it. I mean, if you look down the line of you look at that beautiful shot down the line of the vineyards, where it's, you know, line, it's maintained in between. But yeah, if you're not going to let me do it that way. So hurdles, I think we talked a little bit, we're going to mix jobs again. I mean, you're managing land. Some landowners are not in your area. They're somewhere else. Is that a problem? And now I'm going to get you in trouble with the other boss, But I mean, it's the same out here in corn country and soybean. There's not every landowner is in the neighborhood where the combine's running through, just like for you. And so it's not a unique problem to you.
Yeah. Like you said, we have a lot of absentee owners here. We're farming their ground and managing their vineyards for them. And that's part of the issue is the rest of the property isn't making money. So they're not putting any time, effort into maintaining that. I think the 2017 fires, people started to wake up. The LNU fire in August, more people woke up. We actually got some phone calls saying, hey, you know, we're interested in doing prescribed burn. Is that something that you guys could help us with as a company? And we said yes. And now after this glass fire, there's even more people saying, this winter, we want to get together. We want to start making a plan. We want to figure out what we can do to make our ranch, you know, more fire safe and start managing it correctly. So I think that these fires, the silver lining is people have woken up and realized we need to do something. And it's, in my opinion, hard for environmental groups to prevent some of this from happening that needs to happen because their house is going to be the next one to burn down. I mean, we lost 600 houses so far here in Napa County, and these are mostly blue collar communities. where the houses were lost because they're outside. They're on the outskirts. You know, they're not in the valley proper. They're in the hills, and that's where it's cheaper, more affordable to buy a house.
Farm Bureau wise, grapes, is that primarily the big ag industry? Are we missing something that you're doing in the middle that some people might be surprised about that goes on in Napa County?
Grapes is our primary crop by far. And then behind that would be cattle. We still do have cattle ranches, especially the eastern part of the county. And we do some olives. But very on very, very small scale. Vineyard is by far the most profitable, really the, if you're trying to make a living, the only thing you can do
here. So unfortunately, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead, Johnny.
No, just with the cost of land, it only makes sense to do vineyard, unfortunately.
Yeah. You see that it takes a massive incident to get people's attention, and let's hope that maybe there's going to be some type of change. I mean, I know you hear discussions of, you know, maintain, and you just hope that at some point that it does take work, because, I mean, we didn't burn years and years ago like this, but it's become more of a modern issue, and unfortunately, it's something you've become all too familiar with.
Yeah. You know, we've always had fire here. They just haven't been to this extent. They haven't been so large and so rapidly expanding. And the winds play a part of that. And we've always had wind. And I'm not sure, you know, 100% what has changed to that extent, or if anything has, other than, you know, the Tubbs fire in 2017. The Santa Rosa and crossed a 6-lane freeway and kept burning houses down. That was 100% wind driven fire, but it was the same fire that we had in 64. It's just, we have a lot more houses and a lot more areas that we need to focus on as firefighters than just fighting the fire that we didn't have, you know, 50, 60 years ago. So I think that's probably part of it.
How are numbers in the fire department? You got people that are willing to step up, or are they going, hey, this is getting to be too much and I've got other things I need to do? And sometimes it's good for business. Sometimes it's not for getting recruits. What's this latest stretch been for volunteers?
Right now we're at, our fire department's about 25 members. Our department's 100 years old, and 3 years ago, the fires definitely always, we get a perk and more interest in it. It's just a large time commitment. For our little fire station, we run about 1,000 calls a year. It keeps you busy, but
keeps you busy.
Yeah, you definitely see the volunteerism falling off with the millennial generation, which but it's still alive, still working.
You'll get them. They'll realize, and you know, maybe this is, you know, world's been a change in here. 2020's kind of readjusted some things, and be kind of curious to see how it all comes out at the other end. All right, I've been to your area. If other people haven't been to Napa County, give me a secret that maybe not as touristy, but really something I got to see.
Ooh, something you got to see. I would say to get off the main road and go drive the back roads. You're going to see a lot of the way Napa Valley was 50 years ago. There's a lot of real big, fancy, beautiful wineries and vineyard estates, but you get off the beaten path and you'll see the old farmhouses and barns and the way that it used to be when prunes was a big commodity here. And, you know, when grape wasn't king, I think that's what you'll see. It's a beautiful area, and you'll get out of the valley is all grapes. But when you get up into the hills, you have the grapes, you have the forest, you have some grazing ground. I think that'd be really the secret, is get off the beaten path.
Good advice. I appreciate the time, Johnny. Thank you so very much, Johnny White, for the time.
Thank you.
My thanks to Johnny White, to John Torpy. John Torpy, say thank you.
Thank you very much for having me, Paul. This is a big story with a lot of details, so it's kind of fun to have another avenue to kind of lay out some of this info for people.
So if you want to know what John Torpy's talking about, go back to the very beginning of this episode. But this has been a production of Iowa PBS and Market to Market. I'm Paul Yeager. Thanks for listening.